Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'd like to focus on what plaintiff believes were three incorrect trial rulings that...
Is there anywhere in this record a diagram showing the accident, what the scaffold looks like and where the mid-rail was and all that?
There were, photographs that showed the scaffold about a half hour after the accident, which
How about a diagram so we could have a sense of what the setting was? Instead of all these words, why not a diagram? Isn't there anything in the record?
There's nothing other than photographs, which did not apply because they didn't show the scaffold.
So you have an accident, and it depends critically on, the scaffold and where it was and this and that and north and south. And you try to present a case like that without a diagram so that a judge can visualize what went on?
Well, in the trial itself, we had an actual scaffold in the courtroom so the jury could see and understand what we were talking about. Unfortunately, there was no diagram entered into evidence.
Any pictures taken of that?
Of the scaffold?
To preserve it for the record?
No, there was not. It's our position to perhaps help assist the court that there were two parallel scaffolds running.
See, when you try to describe these things, it's so difficult to visualize. And all you need is a simple diagram or a photograph. I don't understand that. Why don't lawyers understand that we want to be able to visualize the situation when we're dealing with an accident case?
I apologize, and you're correct. It would have been, I'm sure, much easier for this court to grasp what we were talking about. In essence, so what was going on is that Mr. Aguirre was walking on two planks that were a foot and a half wide, and there was nothing to protect him from falling off of those planks. And it's our contention that even though this whole issue and case revolved around a fall off of a scaffold, that the judge at the trial level incorrectly eliminated the issue of fall protection from the case. Our expert, Mr. Frank Marino, would have testified that there should have been guardrails next to this narrow pathway that Mr. Aguirre was on to prevent him from falling off.
Well, I thought your theory of the guardrails was not that it would prevent him from falling off, but that he might have grabbed onto it on his way down.
Well, it depends on how the fall happened. There were conflicting stories or views as to what happened. Mr. Aguirre, who in the accident suffered a severe head injury, it was his perception that as he was walking on these two planks, that one fell out from under him, and that's what caused him to fall. However, the second witness and the only other eyewitness who saw any part of the fall was Mr. Mike Hooten, and he was standing probably from the same distance from me to the bench, and what he saw was that Mr. Aguirre fell first, and then the plank fell off of the scaffold. From that evidence, two conclusions could be made. Either Mr. Aguirre just simply slipped off of the scaffold, or the plank fell and caused him to fall. And this was noted by the trial judge in his order when he said that based on the testimony of Mr. Hooten, the jury could have concluded that the falling plank did not precede Mr. Aguirre's fall, but rather was caused by his fall. And if that, in essence, was how the accident happened, which had to be determined by the jury, then having guardrails in this area arguably would have prevented the accident, would have prevented Mr. Aguirre from falling. On the other hand, if the accident happened as Mr. Aguirre perceived it, where the plank fell out first, then arguably he would have had the opportunity to catch himself on the guardrail.
Why wasn't the jury asked what happened?
Because by that point, Your Honor, the trial judge had already ruled that any testimony regarding fall protection, guardrails, was out of the case. And any time that subject came up, in fact, Mr. Aguirre talked about it on one occasion. There was an objection, and we were stopped from going any further into it. So the jury had no idea. They had no information, no evidence that there was a requirement to have fall protection or guardrails in the area.
I'm not talking about the requirement. I'm just talking about how the accident happened.
There was no special interrogatory submitted on that issue of how.
So don't we have to assume the jury made the finding most favorable to the, or chose the alternative that was favorable to the defendant?
Well, I'm not sure that either situation, a guardrail could have prevented the accident, regardless of which way the jury decided it happened. In the instance,
guardrails aren't put up in order to. I mean, there's a problem of, you know, what the scope of the intended protection, what the object of the protective device is. Guardrails aren't set up so that when you fall off, you can grab for them.
Well, I mean, guardrails are to help keep the worker on the scaffold. I mean, whether it's
to help you from falling off, but not if you've already fallen off. Grabbing for a guardrail is a pretty desperate measure.
True. On the other hand, in the event that one, they were to conclude that the plank fell out of the scaffold, the other argument and basis for having that evidence in was that if these guardrails had been in place, Mr. Aguirre would never have been on the scaffold where he fell from.
How did you made a proffer of what your expert would testify to?
Yes, I mean
what was that proffer?
The proffer was both his written report, which was very extensive and detailed as to what he was going to testify to, plus his deposition testimony, which was over 150 pages or somewhere in that area. So the court had, I believe, all the testimony that Mr. Marino was going to give at trial. So we believe that by taking that issue away from us, the guardrail, that an important issue was taken from the plaintiff.
The issue specifically was what? Was taken away? What issue?
The issue that TBMK had control over the guardrail, and that this was a clear...
What does that mean? You know, I didn't get anything. I don't get anything out of control.
Right.
I don't even understand res ipsa loquitur, what it adds.
Well, in this particular case, when...
I mean, what's your theory of what happened? Your theory is that the defendant what? It did what? Or it failed to do what?
All right. In this particular case,
it's negligence.
The negligence was that what we were hamstrung and could not present fully was the fact that in this particular case, TBMK was involved in helping design this particular scaffold. And in fact, it was their idea.
Is this a products liability case?
No. It's a case where they...
I don't know. When you say improper design of a product, that sounds like a product liability case.
No, what they did is they approved the use of the scaffold without guardrails, and that was their negligence, and that they, in fact, helped come up with the plan to use the scaffolds without guardrails. That was their negligence.
They helped to come up with a plan. That's a design defect in the scaffold, isn't it?
That's
correct.
You're
saying they're responsible for... They're responsible for a design defect in the scaffold, and they not only that, but and they approved it when they shouldn't have.
That's correct. Okay. That they used their supervisory powers.
Product liability. But anyway, okay. So why do we have to get into res ipsa loquitur and control? That doesn't sound. Get that.
Well, control was, I mean, res ipsa was an alternate theory.
I don't understand res ipsa. I don't understand it at all. See, it's either negligence or there isn't negligence.
There was testimony.
And you said, you know, you have a theory of negligence, which is that they participated in designing a dangerous scaffold, and then they improved it despite the danger. So what more do you need?
I agree, Your Honor, but
so
we were...
Was that the theory you presented, or were you hamstrung?
We were hamstrung. We couldn't.
What happened?
We could not present the theory about the guardrails. May I? Excuse me. Because of the court's ruling, we were not able to present our theory on the guardrails. So the only theories we were left with concerned theories that the scaffold slid because it was not properly interconnected with braces, or it also slid because it was sitting on pieces of wood.
What was the judge's basis for keeping out the handrail evidence?
The judge, in our view, incorrectly treated the motion in limine as a motion for summary judgment, and in essence ruled that there was no evidence of proximate cause connecting the allegation of the negligence of not having the guardrails and the ultimate fall. And that was his basis. He concluded that there was no connection. We dispute that. As we discussed previously, there were connections in that if the guardrail had been there, Mr.
Your point does turn on whether the record has evidence that would support that, your theory.
Correct, and we believe that there is evidence.
You first have to find that evidence in the record.
Right, and the evidence.
Dispute.
Well, the evidence as to how the fall exactly took place, there are varying versions of it. So there is disputes on what exactly happened.
And the district court took a view.
Correct. The district court took a view that there was no proximate cause connection between the lack of guardrails and the fall. But we believe that there were at least three
At what point did he make that determination?
He ruled twice on it. We initially had a pre-trial conference, and that, I believe, was in July or August.
Before the submission of evidence to a jury.
Correct. We submitted our final pre-trial order. We had a hearing. The judge made a ruling. Then before the start of the trial, we raised the issue again, and we asked him to reconsider, and we added additional arguments about how there was testimony, or we believed there would be testimony, that Mr. Aguirre tried to catch himself, or that there was testimony by Mr. Hooten that was, you know, different than Mr. Aguirre's version, and that there was a tribal issue of fact that should have required the issue going to the jury on the guard.
Again, these were proffers saying this is what so-and-so would testify?
Correct. The court had both the deposition and the report, which were detailed and extensive.
Well, according to your opponent, your problem was that Marino said that the absence of the rail was irrelevant if the fall occurred as Mr. Aguirre said it did, right?
Correct. He did say that, yes.
So what does that leave us with?
Well, there were, going into trial, there were two different theories that existed. The defense theory of the accident was that Mr. Aguirre, while trying to cross between two scaffolds, fell in between them, that he never made it from the north scaffold to the south scaffold. And then they decided that they would withdraw that theory. However, they did not stipulate that Mr. Aguirre fell because a plank fell out. And they still contested the issue whether it was a plank falling out or Mr. Aguirre simply falling off of the scaffold. So during the course of the trial itself, there was a different dynamic where counsel for the defendant attacked Mr. Aguirre's memory. He attacked his credibility on how the accident happened, brought up testimony of two other people to whom Mr. Aguirre allegedly said that he could not remember or recall how the accident exactly happened. So there was a contested issue at trial, and in a new dynamic, a new form, where they didn't contest, I mean, they were still contesting whether or not a plank fell, and they were suggesting that he simply fell off the scaffold. And if Mr. Aguirre simply fell off the scaffold, then the guard rail protections would be important. And Mr. Marino was not the jury. His purpose was to provide expert guidance on what did OSHA require and whether or not this scaffold met OSHA.
I thought, didn't the judge say that saving yourself by grabbing at the guardrail notion was not in Marino's written report or deposition?
That's true, it was not. However, it's the jury that ultimately has to decide the issue of proximate cause. Mr. Marino had varying possibilities, and he chose what he thought was the most probable. But it would be up to the jury to decide if those guardrails...
He thought the more probable was that he had fallen off the scaffold?
No, his opinion was that it was more probable that a plank collapsed off a support and caused Mr. Aguirre to fall.
Marino thought it was a plank that fell.
Correct.
Did you ask, make another stab at having that expert testimony after the plaintiff testified?
No, I did not. By that time we had raised the issue twice, and the trial judge seemed to make a very definitive ruling that he was not going to change on it, and we did not. So we tried to go with and deal with the evidence as best we could under the circumstances.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lundblad. Mr. Knight?
Am I off? May it please the court. I represent TBMK. After a jury trial was ordered by this court, we had raised a couple of by motion summary judgment and one which we had won in the lower court, issues concerning
So what happened? I'm still bothered by the absence of a diagram. Were there two scaffolds side by side or what?
There's two scaffolds. Imagine this is a scaffold, and then there's an identical scaffold on the other side separated by a doorway. The doorway is up here. They were putting brick around the outside and the inside of the doorway.
So how much space between them?
I think it was 2 or 3 feet. And the only evidence of how the accident happened comes from Mr. Aguirre himself, who testified clearly and unequivocally that while he was working on one scaffold, he was going to the mirror image of it on the south side, and he put a couple of planks up there to get over to the other side to begin working on the other side of the door. And it's undisputed that he made it.
Oh, I see. So there are planks connecting the two scaffolds. It's not the floor of the scaffold.
It's both. There are planks, wooden planks, on each scaffold supported by supports like this, and the scaffold boards themselves that fell, or allegedly fell, overlap each other. And Mr. Aguirre's...
I don't understand. There are two separate scaffolds. I thought you said he laid planks connecting the two so he could walk...
He did. This each individual set of scaffolds involve a pipe structure across which boards are laid across supports in order to stand and do the work and to put bricks on.
How many planks?
Two. Walking planks.
That's what he walked on, and they abutted each other?
They overlapped each other. There are actually four, I'm sorry. Side plank here, plank here. And then in order to expand the length of the scaffold, they also overlap. And underneath those planks were supports.
I don't understand. The failure to include diagrams or photographs is so troublesome.
I understand that.
Because I don't know what you're talking about. So I thought there were two parallel scaffolds with a doorway in between them.
That's right.
Now, what connects the two scaffolds? Because I get the impression they're 2 or 3 feet apart. So presumably he didn't jump. He walked on something. Now, what was he walking on? Was he walking on planks that were perpendicular to the scaffolds?
That's what he said got him from one freestanding scaffold to the other freestanding scaffold. These things are like a set of sawhorses on either side of the doorway, if you can imagine that, with planks on each side.
Well, that wasn't designed. That wasn't the way it was originally designed. He added his own planks so he could move, wouldn't have to get off the scaffold and back on the other side.
That's right. And the evidence is clear, too.
He laid a couple of planks perpendicular to the scaffolds?
That's what he said, yes.
Okay.
And for the record, too, these scaffolds on either side of this doorway, there was a lintel beam that formed the top of the doorway in question. That came about belly high. There was an issue about how high it was or should have been, but that's one of the evidentiary issues.
So he had to
issues.
Crawl across?
Pardon?
He had to crawl across?
I think the evidence would clearly indicate that he would have to crawl across. At any rate, he had a means by which he could have gotten down off of one scaffold and come around and gotten on the other side, which he didn't do. He just said he traversed it. Well, everything related to this absence of this mid-rail involves whether or not there was a mid-rail on the sides of the scaffolds that face each other that
right.
theoretically would have inhibited him or discouraged him from going from one scaffold to the other. But the evidentiary point I wanted to make is that Mr. Geary testified without any reference to, gee, I don't know what happened. He said that he made it from one side to the other, took a couple of steps, and then the boards that he was walking on then fell.
The ones he put on to?
No.
The ones that scaffold on
yes,
the other
sir.
Side.
Yes.
So were there any? His, I'm sorry. Yeah,
no. Were there any handrails at all on this on either scaffold?
Yes, on all
on three, the outside.
On all three sides.
On the out, I mean, yes.
Right.
Not where the doorway was, but the other.
Right,
side.
Because between the doorway that served, according to the people who put it up, served as the mid rail, and there was a dispute initially about. You know, this issue, you know, was a property used that as a mid-rail or wasn't
so
it?
Both, both scaffolds had handrails on the end and what I would say would be the back as you're facing putting brick on the wall.
Yes.
Well, what's your conception of the significance? Oh, well, I'll give Mr. Lindblad an opportunity to respond, but what is your conception of how the plaintiff thinks that the absence of a mid-rail was a causal factor in the accident?
I don't know, in light of his expert's opinion that he made it from one side to the other. From what I understand is that theoretically another
rail... No, I understand. That's if he made it from one side to the other, how did he fall? I thought he fell...
He testified that he fell while walking on the walking surface, not the planks he put up.
But he fell on the second scaffold.
That's right. And
destination scaffold.
Yes. And there are pictures. I thought there were pictures in the record. At any rate, these boards overlap, and I think he theorized initially that they weren't overlapped correctly. One of the boards that he was going to walk on wasn't, in fact, supported underneath. There was nothing to...
So he's saying that the floor of the scaffold... The floor of the second scaffold, the one he went to, was defective. Is that
that
did Marino testify about that, or you know, he discussed that possibility? Or?
I don't remember exactly if he said. I think that these boards weren't put up there correctly, but I don't think that there's any testimony that it could have been anything else that would have caused it to fall in the way Mr. Aguirre said. Now, he did tell two other people a year apart after the accident. He had no idea how it happened. So
when you say the boards overlapped, what size planks are these?
One was 8 feet and one was 12, I think.
What other dimensions? What were the height?
I think 2 inches thick, 12 inches wide.
2 by 12s.
Yeah.
And they overlap? So one would be 2 inches...
They overlap, yes, they overlap in order to span the entire length
right.
of the scaffold.
I understand that, but was one on top of the other when
yes.
you say overlap?
Yes.
So there was a natural, that caused a 2-inch unevenness in the scaffold.
Well, right, and that's by design, and nobody's critical of that. That's
right,
the way they're put up.
I'm trying to understand how it was. That's
what it is. And underneath... That presumes that there's a support
where they overlap, there's something supporting it underneath.
That's right. That's right. And
what do you think caused the accident?
Well,
did you present to the jury some alternative theory?
Well, I argued, and I think that they could reasonably conclude from the evidence that somebody didn't overlap them correctly. Otherwise, according to what Mr. Geary said happened at trial. There wasn't another explanation.
That
although,
would cause him to go to give both planks to give. Then.
That's right. And this setup was finalized a couple of hours before the accident happened. So taking what Mr. Aguirre said happened and the fact that I took his deposition, I asked him about it at trial, he tried to recreate this situation that he thought happened, i.e. that somebody didn't overlap the boards correctly. He tried to, and he took pictures of it at home. To show what he thought happened, although at the trial he wasn't so sure, you know, as to why he did that.
I see. So his theory, which you accept, I take it, is that there was something wrong in the flooring of the.
I don't think I accept it. I think it's a theory that the plaintiffs could, sure.
So then who would be responsible for that?
All masonry. The testimony was clear that although...
His employer.
Yeah. It was by contract. Right. And they had four or five or six, I'm not sure, I lost count somewhere along the line, people that were certified in setting up these scaffolds. Those were their scaffolds. They were the experts in doing that.
Are these scaffolds assembled on the spot or?
Yes. Yeah, they're put together.
They're assembled
like an erector set type of thing.
And what does your client supply then? The erector
in
set.
In terms of equipment, nothing. We didn't supply anything to All Masonry for that setup. As far as I know, we didn't provide any equipment. And that was all by contract, too. So after the court here decided that under 414 construction negligence scenarios that we, TBMK, in fact, owed a duty, that first step to get past the initial hurdle in a construction case, it becomes a negligence case. It becomes a negligence case where the jury is asked to decide whether or not TBMK exercised ordinary care. And on one hand, the evidence of control that this court found was necessary to impose a duty upon TBMK and the reason we tried the case, on one hand, what's good for the defense in that regard is bad for the plaintiff after the testimony comes out of all the things that we did on a regular basis on this project, not the least of which was have OSHA there all the time. We had people dedicated to full-time inspections. We had requirements that the subcontractors, all of them, have safety personnel. We had, and all of this was, I think Mr. Marino finally testified that, you know, these are good ideas.
Is there any evidence of the interval between when the scaffold was set up and when Aguirre's accident occurred?
Most people say it was finished that morning, maybe a couple of hours, and I think one person, whose name I don't remember, said it might have been finalized the day before. Either way, All Masonry had a procedure by which they green tagged them, and nobody really says whether they saw a green tag that morning, but anyway, they had a procedure in place.
Who attaches the green tag?
Whoever finished the scaffold.
The assembler.
Yes.
So the green tag just means it's ready to be stood on.
Right. And while we're on the issue of, you know, what basis did the jury have for concluding that, we weren't liable in this case, there was testimony that all bricklayers testified said, for sure, whenever we get on a new scaffold, we make sure that there's a green tag on it and we make sure that we look at it ourselves for the obvious reason that you want to make sure it got put up right. And Mr. Aguirre testified that he never heard of such a thing and never did it, despite all this other testimony. Another basis for the jury to have concluded under the facts and the instructions that we just weren't at fault. And I think the instructions obviously were accurate. It was according to pattern instructions. There was no reason to deviate that's been raised here from those pattern instructions, either in the negligence aspect, which is really straightforward, or the res ipsa, which I don't think anybody understands either. As far as res ipsa count is concerned, though, if there is anything clear from it, is that the jury can make certain inferences in certain cases that the defendant was negligent. Obviously, they didn't in this case, or they could have said that we didn't have control of the scaffold, in this case, sufficient for that part of the plaintiff's theory. Or maybe more likely, under this scenario, a res ipsa count only gets you to the question of were they negligent in the first place, and it gets us back to if a jury in this set of facts decided that we weren't negligent under one count, I think they certainly would have concluded at some point that we weren't negligent, period, under res ipsa. There's nothing different about negligence under traditional negligence theory and negligence after you get there by virtue of res ipsa.
Was this a full-scale
set up the scaffold in the courtroom?
It was. The plaintiffs actually brought it in, and it was full scale, substantially the same as the one in question.
Satisfied you as well?
I mean, yes, I was. I had no objection to it being used for demonstrative purposes. No, it was okay.
Nobody stood on it in the courtroom.
A couple of us took the opportunity to shake it every once in a while to show how stable it was. There was a question about that, but you know, everybody testified that this was the real deal, and that they didn't wobble as Mr. Marino, the expert, theorized happened. Everybody that saw it before and everybody that saw it after said it was fine.
And nobody suggest you take a picture of it either.
No, had I had it to do over, I probably would have.
I don't know how else you preserve things like that for the record on appeal.
Well, I was satisfied with the result.
Right.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Knight.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Lundblad, we'll give you a minute because you asked a lot of questions.
Thank you, Your Honor. With regard to TBMK's...
So is it your theory also that probably what happened was that the scaffold was defective because of the, not its design, but that it was improperly assembled?
If it happened as Mr. Aguirre described, yes, because the plank fell because it was not supported, obviously. And there was testimony that, you know, planks don't fall unless they're unsupported.
But your alternative theory is that he fell in the crossing and grabbed for, and there was no mid-rail to grab for? Is that the alternative?
Well, the alternative would be that he simply fell off the scaffold. I think Justice Kahn raised...
Not while crossing?
Correct, because he testified he recalls being on the scaffold. And I think Justice Kahn pointed out that there is differences in levels of the planking, so somebody could easily trip or misstep because they're looking elsewhere. And that would be the purpose then of having the guardrails would be to protect.
So is there no real disagreement about what happened, but just about whether Turner was responsible?
Well, I have to disagree with how counsel portrayed what happened at trial, because he did not concede or stipulate that the plank fell and caused Mr. Aguirre to fall. That he raised questions.
He made clear he didn't do that. Yeah, but doesn't the issue come down to so assuming there was enough evidence to justify that conclusion that the planks weren't overlapped properly, then doesn't it just come down to Turner's responsibility?
It would, and that's another point. In the events leading up to trial, counsel conceded that control was not an issue, that it was already determined.
Control. I just want to know whether the issue comes down to is Turner responsible, culpable in some sense, for the fact that the scaffold was defective or the defect wasn't.
Yes, correct, because they had supervisory controls.
So, but your alternative theory is that if there had been a mid-rail, even if this was the cause of his fall, this defective design and so on, if there had been a mid-rail, he might have grabbed for it and not fallen.
Or in the alternative, he never would have been there, because he would have had to go through two mid-rails to get from
He wouldn't have been on the scaffold he fell off.
Right. He would not have been on the defective scaffold.
Okay, good. Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel.